You're listening to KBOO Portland, and it's time for the Underground, the Youth Collective's once-monthly show, Public Affairs. This month, the theme is failure, and we have a very appropriate show in that regard, because it's been quite a struggle the past hour or so trying to get this thing put together. And segueing from there, we have a member whose piece did not pan out, and I'm going to ask him a few questions about that. And hopefully you'll get a little sense of what it should have been in a perfect world where everything happens the way it should. So, hello, Thad.
How's it going?
It's okay. How are you doing today?
All right, feeling like a failure.
Oh, I'm sorry it had to be this way, but it's the nature of the beast.
No, it happens.
What was your piece about?
Well, my piece was about, I was trying to do a thing on failure, and through failure, I was going to have the guy talk about him succeeding through failing.
That's a little hard to wrap your head around. Could you go into a little more detail?
Well, I wanted someone, because I know a lot of people who failed in something, but through that they learned something and succeeded. And that didn't happen with this guy.
Didn't happen?
No, that's what I was hoping to get through this interview with him, and it didn't work.
It didn't work because he didn't learn anything from it?
No, it was more the fact that this guy was really drugged out, and it just, you know, some of the things he said had a lot of cussing in it, a lot of editing, so I didn't get to that in time.
And but your subject himself, did he end up succeeding in the end?
No way.
He didn't.
No way possible.
Oh. But it would have been a very appropriate and beautiful piece, I'm sure. If you want, you can still go through that tape, find something cool, and we'll play it.
I think it's too big of a failure to try that.
Ouch.
How about every time someone says failure, we ring a bell or something?
It could be the magic word, just like Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yay! And then the chairs talk.
No, then everyone screams. That's how it works. Enough fun and games. We're going to pass it over to Brianna right about now. And she's got somebody in the studio.
I've been a member of Sisters in Action for about 4 years. And recently I've graduated to becoming staff, and so now I'm on staff and here with Sisters.
Awesome. And so could you tell us just a little bit about the Sisters in Action for Power Group itself? Like, how long has it been around, and what do you guys do there?
So Sisters in Action, for people who don't know, is a community organization, and we work with low-income girls and girls of color in the community, particularly North and Northeast Portland, and we work to develop leadership skills and organizing skills of these girls. And so many people know us from our bus pass campaign, which was against TriMet to get the bus passes lowered. So
awesome. So how many girls would you say are involved right now?
There's about 7 to 10 girls involved right now.
That's awesome. So you mentioned that you had done the bus pass thing back in 2002?
It was a couple
while
years
ago. What other projects have you guys worked on?
Well, right now we're in the past we've also done stuff in the schools around sexual harassment with girls in public schools, and we've got that added on to the sheet. When something happens at school, there wasn't a spot for sexual harassment, and so that was another campaign we worked on, a gender violence campaign. So
nice.
Yeah.
Now, when you work on these, do you normally work with like one particular school in Portland or multiple schools? And
well, the organization is a community organization, and we work on issues that are affecting the community. And so now, with this campaign that we're doing now, it's around schools. And so this campaign is our the campaign is called SOS Squared, which stands for Support Our Schools and Students. And this campaign we've been doing for about a little over 2 years, maybe. Wow. And it's to address the No Child Left Behind Act.
So do you want to tell us just a little bit more about the project that you're currently working on? Like, what got you guys excited about working on this project as opposed to something else?
Yeah, so there's many issues, you know, that are affecting us in the communities. And the way we decide which issue to work on is we want to work on the issue that is most affecting the members in our organization. So that would be the youth. And so we saw that this school issue was the most accurate to what we do.
Awesome. So what are some of the plans in your current campaign involving schools?
We've done a lot of work on this campaign as far as research, talking to people in the schools about what they think about the No Child Left Behind Act and how it's affected schools. And we know that many people are against the results of No Child Left Behind, but they don't know that it's coming from this act. And so we've done many things to reveal this information. We have actions where we try to expose that information and raise awareness in the community. And we've done that many times with the girls walk on busy streets, on intersections, and hold signs and stuff. And we've also had an action with the school board where we presented to them some demands that the students and members of our organization have came up with. So,
awesome. Yeah. So when you guys have a project, is it generally like that's your one focus and that's the only thing you guys work on, or do you guys have side projects and other things you focus on as well?
Yes, yeah, so running a campaign is a lot of work, so usually we only run one campaign at a time. But there's other things that we do while we're running a campaign. We support other organizations in the community, and we support other issues that are happening in the community, but our main focus is on that campaign. So, yeah.
Wow. So how do you guys start your campaigns? I mean, to me, I couldn't even imagine trying to start a campaign, so how do you guys work that out?
Well, we, like I said, we try to develop the leadership skills and other kind of skills that, you know, a leader in the community has to have. And so when we run campaigns, we pick a campaign, like I said, the most affected by the members of our organization. And from there, we start doing research to find out more about the issue, where it comes from, who's benefiting, who's losing. And once we find that research, we try to get it out to the community and find out what the community feels about it, what kind of action the community wants to take, and how we can make that happen. So, yeah.
What are some ways that you guys find to actually reach out to your community, as in, like, trying to get people's interest in things? How do you...
With students or with...
With students or...
Well, the issues that we work on are issues that the community all, like, they know about. It's issues that the community is aware of that are already happening. So it typically isn't hard to get people involved on this issue because it's something that everyone wants to see changed. This campaign is a little trickier because it's being masked. And so although it's in the end not good for our schools because it's in the end going to privatize all the public schools, people don't know that. And because they don't say that, you know, they're not saying, yeah, we're going to privatize all the public schools. So it's a little harder to get people involved in this campaign because they don't know what exactly No Child Left Behind is sometimes, and the whole entire act and what it entails.
Wow. So one of the things that was brought up in this is some of the stuff that's going on with Jefferson High School in Portland.
Yeah.
And I'm not actually from Portland, so I'm not too familiar with it. Do you want to talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Jefferson, that's a school we've worked with a lot. We have members of our organization go to attend Jefferson High School, and so the Jefferson is really important to us in the community and to our organization, to our members. And so recently, I'm sure people know this, but on Monday, the board passed a proposal to make Jeff same-sex schools and to divide it up amongst boys and girls. And so this was very disappointing to a lot of people in the community. And we, Sisters in Action, was very disappointed with the decision that the school board made and the superintendent of our schools made without the community support. So, yeah, that's really big.
Wow. So are you guys working at all to work with the issues there, or are you trying to focus more on just all of the schools and community involvement?
Yes, so we were never working on that issue particular around the proposal, but we know that that proposal, the things that were coming out of the proposal were things, some things were from No Child Left Behind that the district had put on the schools with, like, testing procedures and, like, Jefferson has gone through a lot of things from, like, restructuring the school and making it into two schools. They've been going through a lot of things because of No Child Left Behind. And so that's our campaign. And we know that Jefferson is being targeted because it's a predominantly African-American school in the community, and a lot of low-income students go there. And so this is a school that's been kind of what we see as, like, the test for this law, and this is what we see happening to other schools, and we know that this is just the beginning of what's going to happen to all our public schools. And so that's why we were really trying to support Jefferson High School and be involved in that. But also we know that it's more than just Jefferson, and, like, all our public schools are under attack right now.
Yeah, definitely. So do you have anything else you'd like to say about your current, the current campaign that's going on now, or anything else involved with Sisters in Action?
So we're still working on what we're gonna do next, our next steps in the campaign. People know that we've, or for those who don't know, we've, the last action that we had was with the school board, was with the Student Achievement Committee from the school board, and we presented to them our resolutions for change, and they said no to all of them, and they said they agree with everything, but it's not in their power. So we're still strategizing now. We're at the table strategizing so we can make sure that our local public officials are held accountable for what's going on in the schools. So that's where we are.
What do you guys hope will come out of your campaign? What's your final dream for the Portland area?
Well, yeah, so a dream would be that we could abolish the No Child Left Behind Act, but, you know, that's going to take a lot of work and a lot of support from the entire nation because, you know, it is a federal act. But we hope that at least we can raise consciousness in the community and raise awareness so that people know what's going on so they can make that choice to accept what's happening or, you know, fight back.
Awesome. So could you just tell us how to get involved with the Sisters in Action, and if there's anything in particular that you guys need help with on the campaign?
Yes, so there's many ways to get involved. There's the youth from ages 11 to 18 are welcome to, girls are welcome to our office on the corner of 18th and Alberta. We have meetings every Wednesday and Thursday. So that starts after school around 4:30. You could come get involved if you're a youth. Other ways to get involved, just come by and volunteer, or also, you know, we always need things like donations with the after school lunches and stuff like that. There's plenty of ways to get involved, and everyone, of course, is we want everyone to get involved with this campaign because this is an issue that's affecting us all. So, yeah.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Charisse, for being on the show and talking about this stuff.
Thank you.
And I hope that it all works out for you.
Yeah.
Hey, Brianna. Hopefully. Could you please reintroduce your guest real quick? I sort of failed to press the right button at the very beginning of that.
So we're with Charisse, and she is from the Sisters in Action for Power in Portland, Oregon. And we just wrapped up talking about the recent campaign that they're doing and some background on the Sisters in Action.
Thank you very much, Brianna. And now we are going to play a piece by Kira Feldman.
Can I have flour, please?
Is the spicy sauce really spicy?
No. Oh, man. I didn't think about how hard this would be.
I know.
Wait, so we're just going to have to put our burritos in the basket
and
not eat them? This was a really bad idea.
We'll just eat them on the way there. Maybe we can buy something on the waterfront.
Here, let me record the sound of you cheating our picnic.
Mmm. That's good.
Do you guys want to go find one of those info guys? They have these, like, really big boots. And these green shirts that say Portland Info on them. Oh, excuse me. We're looking for the smallest public park in the world.
On Front Avenue, it's Front and Yamhill Street.
Do you think it's possible to have a picnic in the park?
You'd have to stand on it. The entire park. I mean, it's only a foot in diameter.
We've got four people. How do you think we're going to do that?
To have a picnic on it? You'd have to have people on your shoulders, I would imagine.
And are there any benches in the park? Like, mini benches?
There's nothing. There's a plant, I believe.
Can you tell me, what's your name and what do you do?
My name's James, and I'm a Portland Patrol officer.
Okay. I thought that said Portland Parks and Recreation on the side.
Maybe he's walking away right now being like, that was a good one.
I just made up all of that. Okay, so we're in the Visitor Information Center.
The park that's the smallest public park in the world. I think it's like on the waterfront somewhere.
Down on NATO and Taylor.
NATO and Taylor?
Yeah. Mill Ends Park. It's number 11. It's not really worth seeing, to be honest with you, especially this time of year, but if that's your choice.
Yeah, I like how we were like, so who tells her that? She's like, don't go there. It's stupid.
Why do you want to go there? There's nothing to see. Only a park that's in, like, the Guinness Book of World Records.
Really?
Yeah.
There's Waterfront Park.
Yeah.
This park.
Yeah, Waterfront Park. They have concerts.
And that
we can have a
German
music festival.
Bluetooth.
Like, your idea of having your own music festival. Can we play any instruments?
I can whistle.
Wait, one more time. What song is that?
I can't really whistle.
I wish you weren't a liar. Wow, good work, guys. If we need some extra money, we could be street performers.
Wait, I see it. Is that it?
See that little, like, yeah, it's more like a median, but okay.
No, it's not, I swear.
That is the park.
No, what is this? From his office on the second floor of the old Oregon Journal building, journalist Dick Fagan periodically gazed down on the busy Front Avenue thoroughfare. It was his keen imagination that turned a utility pole hole in the avenue's median strip at Taylor Street into Mill Ends Park. It is 24 inches in diameter and contains 452.16 square inches of land.
Ooh.
In his Mill Ends column in the Oregon Journal, Fagan described a variety of events occurring in the park, which were presided over by Patrick O'Toole, head leprechaun residing in the park. Weddings and other celebrations have taken place at Mill Ends, and on St. Patrick's Day in 1976, the site was dedicated as an official park of the city of Portland.
Oh, God! Oh, that's a really bad puddle! Oh! There's all these trash around us! It's really... Oh,
it's not worth it.
I don't want to die.
There aren't any buttons to push, so we have to run.
Good picnic, guys. Good. You want to do it again?
No.
Okay.
No.
That was a piece by Kira Feldman of the KBU Youth Collective. To her surprise, a picnic in the smallest park in the world didn't fail in that funny kind of way. It just kind of sucked in that cold, wet, and tired kind of way. Good thing there's no shame in giving up and heading home. Mills End Park is at the intersection of Front and Taylor, if you're interested. Now,
I'm going to deviate from the topic a little bit because I'm here to talk about something which is not a failure, but is actually really cool. I'm here with Lacey from the Youth Innovation Fund. Lacey, could you tell me a little bit about the Youth Innovation Fund? What is it that you guys do?
Yeah, of course. We are a youth-led social change organization here in Portland, and for the last 2 years, we've done things like give out money to other young people in the community and their organizations that have to be youth-led, and those organizations have created long-lasting sustainable change. We've used these things we called multiple action pathways, which is like a radical new way to go about creating change in the community through things like youth social entrepreneurship, youth philanthropy, youth in media, youth in governance, and things like that. So, and now we are sort of taking a new step and doing things on our own. And instead of giving the money out, we are doing things within the organization. But we are a youth-led social change organization, funded by the Kellogg Foundation, which is key. So,
sounds like you guys are changing kind of the way you do things right now. What spurred this change, and what are you guys going to do from here on out?
Well, from here on out, we're going to be focusing on, like I said, doing things ourselves within the organization. So, for example, we're going to have a full board of young people, and instead of these young people focusing on where to put the money, we're going to be focusing on where to put our actions with the money we already have. And we will be doing things like creating a service learning curriculum and working to implement that into the Portland public school systems in the fall of 2005. Now, service learning is sort of a radical new form of education that is starting to really come up more and more in school systems. It's a really great way to learn. It's a method of education that incorporates community involvement, and it encourages young people to think about the core issues that they're working on, and they can use project experience to enhance their education. So it'd be young people going out into the community and really doing things in order to learn what they want to learn. So we're going to be focusing on service learning, and we will also be focusing on creating a 30-minute youth-led student broadcast that will go on the Portland Public Schools District channel, and that's also to help sort of revitalize that channel because it needs a little bit of revitalization. And the young people will be talking about issues that are prevalent to them that they feel are predominant in their communities, and they'll be creating news broadcasts about that. And then also a youth-led student district-wide newsletter to go out to the Portland Public Schools that will be written by all young people. And in every high school, you've got student newspapers and things like that. Well, this will be one that's for the whole district. So that's some of what we're going to be focusing on.
So this 30-minute video thing for the district channel, would that be like a one-time kind of deal?
No, I can't exactly say how many times it's going to happen, but no, it won't be just one broadcast. It'll be multiple broadcasts, probably I'd like to say monthly or once every 3 months or so, but I can't specify actually right now because I probably don't really know, so.
Oh, that sounds like turned out to be a really cool thing. Which one of these projects are you the most excited about, personally?
I would have to say that I am most excited about the media work, the student broadcast, because I've dabbled in my own media work.
And you've been around here from time to time.
Yeah, we're also going to be doing the monthly KBOO radio shows for the Youth Collective as well, But I'm probably most excited about that one. But it's interesting because the dynamics of the organization are changing. I am now the co-coordinator of the organization, not just a youth board member. And so I can't be as involved as I want to in the in sort of the action of the work. I need to take a more administrative role and things like that.
And
so it's really interesting to watch the dynamics change.
Taking on more of the responsibilities.
Right.
So do you enjoy your new position? Or?
It is the job of my life. I absolutely love it. People talk about success and, funny, the theme is failure, but when people talk about success, they talk about having a job that they love to wake up to, and that's sort of a defining factor in people's life. And when I wake up in the morning, nothing makes me happier than working at this job, so I absolutely love it.
Wow, that's really good to hear.
Yeah.
So, When we were talking before the show, you told me that the Youth Innovation Fund is looking to get new board members.
Yes.
Do you want to tell me about what kind of people you're looking for and how they can get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. We are recruiting new members ages 13 to 19, and in the past, we've recruited new members from Multnomah County, and now we're just going to be focusing on young people who go to a Portland public school or have graduated from a Portland public school, because that's where the change will be implemented, is in this school system. And so we would like to focus more on that area. Ages 13 to 19. And we're also looking for adult board members as well if you're over 19. Another thing we're changing is that the adult board members, we're going to have some members who are just, who are one, and other members who are just, who maybe have especially talented in media work or district-wide newsletter or service learning and things like that. So
how frequently do you guys meet?
Right now we meet twice a month, and we meet at the same time as the Multnomah Youth Commission at Portland City Hall, and sometimes at the Gresham City Hall as well. And if young people are interested in applying for the Youth Innovation Fund, they can always call 503-988-4518. February 8th, no later than 6 p.m. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being here with us, Lacey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm glad to hear about you guys, and I look forward to seeing more work from you in the future.
Absolutely. We'll always be around, so.
Excellent. Sorry about the little pause there. They're waving at us from the air room.
Hey, there I am. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. This is Underground, and this next piece we ripped off the PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, and it was by a kid named Chris of the WAMO, or is that a U?
U, sorry.
Okay, WAMU.
I fail at writing.
Yep, you fail at penmanship. And he's talking about how the SATs could affect your success or failure.
If I were to rattle off a list of my accomplishments, it would sound something like this. I work 20 hours a week at a law firm downtown,
James E. Brown and Associates.
I've done over 100 hours of community service in the past 4 years. I was a DJ at the on-campus radio station at my school.
Tiger Radio.
This is my second Youth Voices report for WAMU. I read the paper every morning, and not just the sports section. And when I took the SATs, out of a possible 1,600, I got a 750. Yes, a 750. When I apply for college, most admissions officers are going to look at that last item first. I wanted to find out more about what the test is supposed to measure, so I called Kristen Carnahan, who works for the company that makes the SAT.
Well, the SAT measures the critical reading and thinking skills that students need to be successful in college.
So it's a measure of how well I'll do in college. But is it accurate? Am I a 750? Now, we're going to do a little math, so pay attention. Statisticians use a scale of 0 to 1 to show how well the SAT predicts a student's college GPA. A 1 would mean the SAT is a perfect predictor of my future grades. A 0 would mean the SAT is basically useless. In reality, the SAT has a predictive validity of 0.52. But what does that mean in English? Kristen Carnahan says,
well, the SAT, I mean, in terms of how well it predicts the grades that students go on to earn in their first year of college, it's a strong predictor.
On average, the SAT is a weak to modest predictor of future college grades.
And that was Monty Neal, the executive director of an organization called Fair Test, which is critical of the SAT. These two people looking at the same number may argue about what it actually means, but they both say it's clear that other factors also play a role in determining how well I'll do in college.
Are you interested in visiting Hampton? We're going on a tour next week.
Byra Cole agrees. She's an advisor for the DC College Access Program and has seen a lot of kids go off to school.
Many times after students graduate from high school, they grow up and they begin to focus whether that SAT score was really low or was really high. So I don't really see a correlation between high scores, low scores. It's really students' personalities that always make the difference.
Well, I think I have a good personality. I have motivation, and my grades are okay. So what's the best way for a college to find that out? Once again, Monty Neal.
Well, we think you should look at, certainly should look at grade point average in the courses you've taken, but you need to look at other things a student does that may not factor into grade. The recommendations a student has, the work a student does, the student's essays and interview. Small elite colleges do that all the time. The bigger state universities, which have smaller admissions budgets, you know, you sort of can eliminate a whole lot of students if you just look at grade point average, rank in class, and test scores.
Which is too bad for me because my first choice school is Penn State, one of those big universities he's talking about. I talked to Patrick Smith in the admissions department there. He told me the SAT accounts for about a third of a student's evaluation at Penn, and the rest is based on a high school transcript.
I'll be honest with you, it would never be the kind of thing that I could say, well, I'm willing to overlook a lower SAT score or a lower high school GPA because of this student's volunteer work. Okay? Despite what you do outside the classroom, I have to know that you're going to be able to have basic survival within the classroom.
That's understandable. But I still think in the long run, the test won't play that big a role in determining my success. For example, one of the attorneys I work with, Chris West, was once like me.
What did you get on your SAT?
I got I had an 880. 880 on my SAT.
And look at where you are today.
Yeah.
I know my score is not a reflection of my potential, but I also know I have to play the game to get to where I want to be. So with a recent paycheck, I went out and bought an SAT workbook and signed up for a prep course for the test. For WMU's Youth Voices, I'm Chris Waddy.
All right, that was a piece by Chris, who's with WAMU, and he was talking about SATs. Next up is a piece by me, Brianna, and basically I thought of some things that reminded me of failure. And one thing that I thought about is news, particularly news on television, and how a lot of the time it's not really news, but more or less various, like, popular things, like, who won this thing on this game show? So I put together sort of a short collage of a few various pieces from television news that kind of reminded me of how television news fails. So here you go.
Come on in, the new Miss America, Jennifer Berry, is with us. Hello,
good
Jennifer.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Why aren't you wearing the crown, the metal hat?
More importantly, why aren't you wearing the crown? That's why I want
to. Well, I'm not Miss America yet.
Well, this is what happily married men told us about their courtships, and there's a huge difference between dating and courtship. Dating is complicated, courtship is easy.
I want to tell you about something that Victoria's Secret, and Brian, stay here, please, because
yes,
we know you know plenty about lingerie. Victoria's Secret has a new line that is aimed at girls, young women, 19 and above. It's called Pink.
Wow, okay, looks like in Detroit we have some rain showers.
Uh-huh.
It'll be a high of about 40. Portland, partly sunny, 37. D.C. looks pretty nice, 52, partly cloudy. Uh-huh. And Charleston, we've got partly sunny, partly cloudy, 51.
Gee, who's your friend?
That's Miss Miss America.
Wow.
Attempting to do the weather.
You are very attractive.
Okay. And every happily married man we talked to said, I knew within 30 days that she was the one, and basically made his intentions clear.
I can.
Yeah, so this is what you'll see when you go into the pink department. Cute, you know, little
right.
things, and then back says pink. These are shorts.
I got the hat.
Yeah, and she also knows ballet, Steve.
I know.
I do. Do you know ballet? Have you ever danced before?
Not professionally.
I do a lot of square dancing. I've done square dancing.
Okay, well, I'm from Oklahoma. We have that there.
You want a do-si-do? Or some do-si-do?
The book is really about a concept we call the alarm, and when a man meets the woman he's going to marry, this alarm goes off.
It's a lot of pink, you know, little candy-colored stuff.
Now, is that a swimming suit?
This is a bra, but, I mean, it covers more than many swimsuits do, I think.
It's true. My daughters are dancing.
They always lie and say they don't know anything.
Well,
can you tell me if we ain't, Mr. Ben? It looks like this.
I just want to know where these women were dating, because in New York City, as a single woman, you're lucky to find out the man's last name in the first 30 days.
Oh, no question about that. We're getting mothers today who are taking the easy way out. You know, it's one-stop shopping. They get their own underwear, and then they buy for their kids, too. But the interesting thing is, you know, underwear kind of implies something that's serviceable, not too cool, and all that. Now they're getting the attitude that this is lingerie, even for 11, 12-year-olds.
When a man sees a woman and thinks she's the one, he will call her right away. He will see her right away.
Says he better be calling in the first 24, 48 hours for that first date.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, would you like to wear the crown?
No.
All right. That was Brianna's excellent, lovely, enthralling, non-failing news collage thinging. It was awesome. Well, we're going to take a musical break. The consensus is musical break right now here in the KBOO air room where the Youth Collective is reigning supreme.
Party room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Party. Yeah. Yeah. Go to a musical break. This song is about failure, as are every other song in this album, which is by The Observers. And the album's called So What's Left Now. The song is The Condition. So enjoy. That was a failure-ific song about failure, which fits in with the Youth Collective's theme of failure.
Well, it's not our theme in general. It's just our theme today.
Oh, yeah. Good point. We don't usually fail this much. And, yeah, the next story is about me failing. It's about me meeting or trying to. I mean, I don't want to give too much away here, but I pretty much say this in the beginning of the piece anyways. Trying to meet one of my biggest heroes. Let's listen to it.
January's theme for the Youth Collective is failure. This is my tragic story of failure, but at least it's a tragic story of failure about Batman.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
A couple months ago, I was reading one of those free weekly newspapers that you see all over downtown, and I happened to see a full-page ad for Nordstrom's. They announced that Batman was going to be in the store for a couple hours to meet with the public. I made a mental note of the date and began to plan on my meeting with one of my biggest heroes, Batman. Naturally, he'd be in his crime-fighting suit. I'd bring along a camera to get a picture of me with Batman, and I'd let him know that I knew his secret identity, but I wouldn't tell anybody if he let me be his new sidekick. Well, the day arrived, and I hadn't forgotten about Batman. I just sort of forgot to look up important details like time and location. I assumed it'd be at the downtown Nordstrom's, a convenient and classy place where I'd previously purchased my beloved sweatshirt, but I was told by the helpful clerk that Batman wasn't going to be at that location. No, he was due to appear at the Washington Square Mall Nordstrom's, and only for barely 2 more hours. Not only that, she informed me that it wasn't just any Batman. It was the Batman. Adam West himself.
Holy hole in a donut!
But before I could go, I had to get something for Mr. West to sign. I ran over to the bookstore in Pioneer Place and managed to find a Batman comic book designed to teach third graders how to read. Price was no object. With the book in hand, I rushed outside and proceeded to wait for the bus. Yes, I was relying on mass transit to get me to the Washington Square Mall. Not only that, but it was on a Sunday. Absolute best case scenario in this situation is a half an hour trip. In reality, it took much longer than that. If only I had some of Batman's wonderful toys, going by Batplane would have been much faster. But things only went downhill once I arrived. First of all, I could not find the entrance to the store, and I had to go halfway around the entire mall to find a way in. Once inside the store, there was no indication of which way to go. But acting on my bat-sleuthing bat skills, I headed for the children's department. Or tried to. The place was like a maze. I did find the area where Batman was supposed to be signing autographs, a full 45 minutes before Batman's visit was due to end, just in time to see caveman-like bouncers roping off the queue line. Trying to reason with these mongoloids accomplished nothing. In a daze of dejection, I wandered to the food court. Nothing appealed to me. In the end, I went to the Cajun Grill with the intent to drown my sorrows in a plate of bourbon chicken. I chose cabbage for the side dish. The chicken was okay, but the cabbage tasted like failure. This has been Ben 2 for the KBOO Youth Collective.
This next piece is an experience with failure.
I failed my last music levels test in college.
I can't believe this happened.
Most recent and last is in
I failed.
The last one I'll ever have to take. If I almost failed to make this piece. As it is, I'll be stuck in school. I know that everybody's failed from time to time. It's a part of life. That is, if I pass the test this March.
You might fail a test at school or someplace else.
I failed my driver's test.
Failed to get that part when you audition. Failed to meet your personal goals.
Everybody has their own personal list of failures and their own standards. I've known people who cry at the sight of an A- on their report card, and other people who don't care a bit about failing geometry because it's easy to make it up in summer school fast.
Till at best a year from now. That is, if I pass the test this March.
Yeah, I cried for a couple of hours back when I failed my driver's test, but now that I've had my license for 4 or 5 years, it doesn't matter so much anymore.
And this whole thing will seem completely inconsequential.
Sometimes failure can even be a good thing. I felt really stupid when I failed out of the honors class at my college, but the university studies classes I've taken to replace that have been some of the best classes I've ever taken. Of course, none of this helps ease the recent failure hanging over my head.
That is, if I pass the test this March. Of course, I know that after this is all over and done with, and I'm out in the real world doing real things or whatever it is.
I failed my last music levels test in college. Last as in most recent, and last as in the last one I'll ever have to take. If I had passed it, I'd probably be graduating this June. As it is, I'll be stuck at school, getting pretty much just those lesson credits, till at best a year from now. That is, if I pass the test this March. Of course, I know that after this is all over and done with, and I'm out in the real world doing real things or whatever it is adults do, then this whole thing will seem completely inconsequential. But somehow I can't stop it from mattering to me right now.
Failure is always the best way to learn. Retracing your steps till you know.
That was a piece by Amber. I didn't cut it off. That happened by itself. Don't blame me. Sorry. Caught me by surprise. Sorry to get defensive. Yeah, piece by Amber. Very well done. Thank you, Amber. Next up is a piece by a student of H.B. Lee Middle School, Lauren, about how she loves dogs.
Hi, my name is Lauren, and I've got a question for you. Have your parents ever told you that you can't love a pet? More specifically, a dog more than you love your family? Well, let me tell you, I've heard that before, and I can prove them wrong. I have 4 dogs. Their names are Gaia, Delilah, Max, and Pandora. Gaia and Delilah are dachshunds. Max and Pandora are Rottweilers, and over 80 pounds, I might add. We used to have another Rottweiler named Brutus, but he got hit by a car. Something just isn't right. I can feel it inside. The truth isn't far behind me. You can't deny. Max and Pandora have to wear shock collars. The reason is because they like to get into my mom's flower garden and eat her flowers. They also like to go chasing after the cats. So we got them shock collars.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more.
My mom and dad hid a wire underground and painted a white line over it to see where it is. The dogs have figured out that the white line means no dog zone. Except for the little dogs, of course. Gaia and Delilah are spoiled. Gaia eats regular dog food, but Delilah, no. Ever since she got depressed, her body started getting bad. But then I started feeding her chicken. That's right, I said chicken. Day after day, month after month, I gave her cut-up, microwaved chicken. But of course, that didn't last long. So now we either give her hot dog or meat from dinner.
Who do you blame when your kid is a brat, pampered and spoiled like a Siamese cat? Blaming the kids is a lie and a shame. You know exactly who's to blame.
Teaching Pandora and Gaia to do some tricks. Some of them include not barking at the door when there's nobody there. My Aunt Carla, who lives with us, gets pretty angry when that happens. Actually, come to think of it, we all get angry when that happens. I'm teaching Pandora to sit, play fetch, and shake hands. With Gaia, I'm trying to teach her how to jump through a hula hoop. She's doing pretty good. If you have a dog or know a dog, you also probably know that they'll do some of the weirdest things. Gaia and Delilah like peanuts, but mostly Gaia. My mom will get a jar of peanuts out of the cupboard, and there'll be Gaia sitting up. Once my mom turns around, she gives Gaia a peanut, of course. But then, Delilah will get out of the blanket and sit there until my mom gives her a peanut, too. Max and Pandora, on the other hand, are not the dogs who will sit for a peanut. They get into the tack room, that's where our horse stuff is, and eat the carrots. They're all a bunch of goofballs.
Oompa-loompa-dee-doo, I've got a perfect puzzle for you. Oompa-loompa-loompa-dee-dee, if you are wise, you'll listen to me.
So the next time your parents say that you can't love a pet more than your family, just tell them that dogs are just like humans, and they're considered family. I mean, they even have their own personalities, and it's like having a sibling. And if they say something about it being a lot of responsibility, well, that's a different story.
That was a piece by Lauren, a middle school student. Very impressive. A student of H.B. Lee Middle School. And she does love those dogs. Well, it's almost time to wrap it up here. But because a little time left, the theme has been failure. If you didn't catch that, the last piece we played did not represent it. But we're going to take a 180-degree shift from that and talk about success. A band called Eyeball Skeleton that we've played many times on our music show Randomonium 2 days from now, 11 p.m. Got played on commercial radio, so yeah, that's some success. Commercial success. And we're going to commemorate this by playing one of their songs.
Bye.
right. You've been listening to The Underground on KBOO Portland, and we're just getting ready to say goodbye to you here. I'd like to thank Lacey from Youth Innovation Fund and Cherise from Sisters for Action for coming down to talking to us today. And I would like to thank Lauren from HB Lee Middle School for submitting a piece. She's never come to any of our meetings or anything, but perhaps we'll see her around sometime. And The Underground is hosted every fourth Wednesday by the KBOO Youth Collective. Our producer today has been Ben Tu, and he did a fantastic job. And we meet every Wednesday at KBOO at 6 p.m. to plan our show. If you're interested in getting involved, come on down and see us, or call our youth advocate, Erin Yankee, at 503-231-8032, extension 511. Her email is kbooyouth@hotmail.com. We do a music show, The Youth Randomonium, the last Friday of every month from 11 to midnight. We're always looking for new music by anyone under 21, any style. We play everything, so if you've got something, send it down. And check out our website at kbooyouth.org. It's just been being worked on, being renovated, so it should be cooler than it was if you've looked at it a few months ago. The first and third Wednesday of the month, you should turn in at this time to listen to Circle A Radio. And the second Wednesday of the month, Hole in the Bucket, a public affairs show on homelessness, airs from 6 to 7. Next up is DJ Audio with Nonstop Hip Hop. Thanks for listening. We can't be happy, we can't be happy.